Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I'm made of gravel.
I'm made of gravel. I am gravel. I'm a big pile of gravel. Look at me. I'm made of gravel. I'm a gravel man. Yeah. Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy Matthews.
And I'm ATB.
Yes.
Did it.
And hello and welcome.
Welcome to all of you. You know, and apologies for not releasing a proper episode last week, but, you know, showing you behind the curtain at one of the Patreon exclusive. They were once exclusive. And now the word is out.
That we just keep them behind a curtain.
We just keep them behind a curtain.
Anybody can tweak it aside and have a bit of a peek.
But there's lots of that kind of stuff and Sci-Fi Try Guys behind the Patreon curtain.
Yes.
But that's not what we're talking about today. But today we are doing something a tiny bit different because there has been some people signing up to the Patreon.
There's been an influx of people signing up to the Patreon, supporting the podcast, giving us $3, $8 donations. Mm-hmm. It's breathtaking.
It's been breathtaking, and we thank you. But we thought, because there's a lot of the three-word suggestions piling up, we thought that today maybe we would try to dedicate an episode to three-word suggestions and try to get to a few.
Correct. We'll see how we go. Mm-hmm. Probably five. Maybe probably six. Five. Will we do the regular five sketches, but with Patreon suggestions?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we always do an extra one. And this time, something special, we'll do it with a Patreon suggestion.
I think that would be a beautiful way of doing it, Andy. I was already contemplating also doing that.
Yeah, great. Well, it sounds like it's going to happen.
God, well, we got both Andy and Al on board.
Yeah, that's almost a quorum here in the think tank.
Should I start by reading out?
Let's just start by reading out, Al.
How about this? This is from Miles. Thanks, Miles.
Miles.
Yes, Miles.
Miles.
It could be that. Yeah, Miles. Hello, Miles. Oh, your three words are.
Yes.
Space boy. Biatch.
So, wait, space boy is hyphenated?
No, it's just one word.
Space boy.
Space boy.
Space boy.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Biatch.
Hang on. How's that spelled?
B-E-E-Y-O-T-C-H. Biatch.
Yeah, great.
And asshat. But it could also be as shat.
A shat.
Yeah.
A shat. Mm-hmm. Sounds Indian. You know, sounds That's maybe right. a little something like a sort of a Hindu temple.
Yeah.
Of a shat.
That's right. That is beautiful. And, I mean, that's a good place to start.
You know.
I mean, is a yacht a thing? Is a yacht? It's sort of like it's kind of like a sticky yacht. You know?
You know, this is something that I've never noticed before, but almost no forms of transport are sticky.
That's true. It's true. It's almost like it's a real gap in the market. If you're, say, an entrepreneur, you know, and you're looking for things that people maybe not necessarily want but haven't made yet, that's a part because maybe people don't know that they want it.
Who's to say what's the better way to go about your entrepreneurial business? Mm. One is to, like, look for things that people want and then see if there's a gap in the market for that.
Yep.
And the other one is to not worry about whether or not people want it but just – look for the gaps.
That's true. Yeah, well we know that the skateboard has grip on the top, right? Sandpaper.
Yeah.
And that's in a form. It's like
a dry stickiness.
It's like a dry stickiness. Mm. It's friction right now. And we know a snowboard is slick on top, but it's got straps to hold you there.
Which is the ultimate friction, sort of, in a way. That's right.
And so...
It's like once you don't trust friction anymore, you know?
Well, let's say instead of straps, there was sort of just two huge sticky globules.
Mm. Well, what about instead of seat belts, okay, the seats in cars were just sticky?
I love that.
You know?
It's kind of like a bean bag, but it's like a gummy kind of honey style thing that you sit in that's sort of stiff, but it kind of envelops you a little bit.
Now, imagine a bean bag, but the balls inside, instead of being that foamy stuff, they're sort of a bit more like a frog's egg.
Mm.
You know, they're sort of gelatinous and gloopy.
Yeah.
Right? Then you plonk down onto it and some of that oozes out through the fabric, right? Clings onto your back.
Clings onto you. Right. And then when you want to pull out, when you pull off, it kind of unclings and then seeps back in due to its own surface tension or whatever.
Due to some sort of a thing. You know, it unclings somehow. It knows.
Well, you pull away from it because you
pull. Yeah, but you don't want to just be able to pull away from it because then when you crash the car, you'll go
the windscreen. But it's like one of those, like a non-Newtonian fluid, but for sort of harder oozes.
Non-Newtonian gluid.
Yeah, non-Newtonian gluid. And so then when you apply hard pressure, it gets really stiff.
It's actually a really, really good idea. Mm. They need to come up with a kind of glue that's only strong sometimes.
Mm.
Maybe that already exists.
Yeah, but then is there the risk? This is the one risk I can see with this.
Yeah.
Is when you're braking really softly.
Yes.
Could you then really slowly go through the
windscreen?
But then why couldn't the windscreen also be made of this stuff so that it's like a nice soft...
When you hit it slowly, you just sort of ooze through it.
Yeah, or
but if you hit it hard, it's like, bam, slamming into a brick wall.
Yeah, oh, it'd be awful. But if you do get thrown at it slowly, it kind of like gently catches you and kind of cuddles you. Mm. It's almost like a
folds
sort of
around you.
Yeah, maybe blocks your airways.
Your airways?
Well, unfortunately, that's maybe the only other downside.
Mm. I think sticky car seats could really be a thing, because if there's one thing that we all agree, it's that seat belts are for dorks, right?
Well, that's right.
Like we drove past some people in a Jeep the other day, like an old World War II style Jeep, and like I bet that in the war, though, all those cool soldiers off to fight cool wars, I bet they weren't wearing seat belts. Right?
Of course not.
No, because it feels like if you go into battle wearing a seatbelt, in a way you've already lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've lost not the high moral ground, but the high cool ground.
That's right. And what would you rather be, a winner or a dork?
Or a dork.
Because you can be both.
Mm. I think, you know, at the end of World War II, we found that the Nazis were both the losers and the dorks, right? So that's kind of like a double loss for them.
Because they were so organized as well. I'm so organized.
Doing what they're told and like having their uniforms all like, you know, fancy and that stuff. Kind of stuff. Yeah. Real dork stuff.
Yeah.
But then you look at some other wars like... let's see.
The Balkans?
What's one that I can be on the right side of, historically speaking, while still making this point? Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. The American War of Independence. Great. Right? One that doesn't really feel like it matters, historically speaking.
Great. Yeah. And it doesn't involve some just like, you know, some... forget it.
The British lost, but they came out looking cool.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. And they didn't wear any seat belts.
And they didn't, exactly.
Did they ever have seat belts on a horse and cart?
Really good question.
Mm.
Mm. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess some people were probably a bit more health conscious. What about helmets? Did they ever wear helmets whilst?
I don't know.
Not bike helmets, though.
Not bike helmets.
Is there any other bits of transport that could be sticky?
Let's see. Airplanes.
Oh, airplanes.
You know, I mean, like...
I mean, if they're sticky on the outside, I guess you'd collect a lot of bugs and stuff.
Could you be in like a real, like in an egg? Mm. If you're in an egg in an aeroplane and it crashed, would you have
like
less
a gelatinous egg?
A gelatinous egg.
And so in there you just kind of got like a little oxygen tank that you can.
Yeah. And then you crash through. And like you just sort of fly out and just sort of bounce across the countryside until you come to rest somewhere.
This is not that dissimilar from our other idea, which was a way of jumping out of planes using a big sandwich.
Oh, or a cake.
Yeah.
You're inside a cake.
So, yeah, the egg part. I guess the harder outside might help protect the thing on the inside.
Could be something. It might be necessary strength. You know, that famously strong and hard outside of an eggshell. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to some different suggestions, Alistair. I think we've absolutely got something there. We could pitch this to Elon Musk.
Well, that's
I reckon
true.
He's looking for this kind of stuff with his new kinds of cars that don't look good or behave well. Don't turn corners very, very well.
Is that a thing?
Oh, there was some footage of him burning off in one of those new pickup trucks from something, and it was the car really kind of like leans out around the corner. Oh, yeah, it looks a bit crazy. Looks like it's about to flip over.
Let's see. So another set of words that we have here is from Stephen Pulbrook. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much, Stephen. 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 Okay, you do. Stephen.
Stephen.
Stephen. Oh, you got to hold it.
Stephen.
Stephen. All right, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Stephen Pulbrook.
I've never been conducted before.
Well, I was just trying to. You were barbershop duetting.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Pulbrook has three words. Do you want to try and guess what one of them is?
We came up with choir shop barbers on the on a different episode, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Choir of like 200 people who show up to cut your hair. Is that what the idea was?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're all dressed in robes and things like that.
Yeah, robes.
They don't sing.
No. No, they just cut your hair.
The words are...
Mm.
I'm sorry, I'm just assuming that you weren't going to guess it.
Yeah, no, I think that would get rapidly... even more tedious than it already is if we were to do it for every set on this episode.
Nation.
Mm.
Approbation.
Mm.
Flockinosinihilipilification.
Nation? Probation?
Yep. Flockinosinihilipilification.
And?
Sinihilipilification.
Dare I ask, Alistair? Have you looked up the definition of flockinosinihilipilification? Because the only thing that it makes me think of is flocking.
Flocking.
You know, like you can get a, sometimes you can get an airbed, you buy an airbed, and it's been flocked. You know about flocked airbeds? You ever seen this?
Oh, are they like a camping one?
Yeah, it's like a camping airbed, but it's all made from just some rubberized plastic or something, but they've done something to the surface of the top layer of rubber that is, it's a little bit, you could almost imagine it's like a bit of fabric or something like that. It's like it's a little bit soft, a little bit hairy, like a sheet.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure if I have. Maybe if it's at one of those camping airbeds that you and is self-inflating.
Mm.
Is that what it is?
No. It's one that you'd have to pump up with a thing. Okay. One of those thicker ones.
Oh,
you know,
like those ones that are a bit hairy.
Yeah, a little bit hairy, a little bit soft.
I know, that's kind of like an artificial velour.
Yeah, it's like artificial velour. Were you deliberately making a joke then?
I knew immediately as I said it that it was a joke, but I wasn't doing that on purpose. This is the action or habit of estimating something as worthless. Flaxy? Nosy? Nihile? Pilification?
The habit of estimating something as worthless. Like I do with everybody else's opinion.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
and evidence that doesn't line up with what I'm pretty already sure is some pretty convincing evidence. Floxinosine, a hillabilification. Floxinosine, a hillabilification. A floxinosine, a hillabilification.
You know, I think that that might be either a made-up word that somebody made up as a joke and then somehow it got included in the dictionary, or it's a very old, kind of old Britannian word, maybe that became Welsh or something like that. I don't know what accent I'm doing here, but you can tell that it's kind of from that region there, in there somewhere.
And you can tell it's definitely like from the sort of the British area because you feel confident doing it.
I'm very confident doing it. Well, you know, I'm doing it all over the place like this. There, hawks and otter aid or the felicitation.
It's you know, there are a bunch of words that are in there that are in the dictionary and that sort of thing. Very like it's you've snuck that one through. By it being technically a word, right? Because you've crammed a few technical things that are technically suffixes together and technically prefixes and that sort of thing. You made something that is a word but would never be used. It's taking up dead space in the dictionary, and it's there to sort of mock all the words that should be in the dictionary but aren't. It's got a kind of word privilege because of where it comes from.
Yeah.
It got in there through nepotism by being descended from actual words.
Yeah.
But then there's lots of new words, working hard, helping people, doing stuff for people every day by meaning things, being easy to say and being useful. Mm-hmm. And then some...
Flocks and orphanage for the filification.
Yeah, it's just in there, you know, has done nothing for nobody ever.
Do you think...
It's like the royal family.
Are there any numbers like that? A satirical number?
Well, I feel like there's probably a lot of the irrational numbers.
Yeah, I was about to say the square root of minus one.
Yeah, an imaginary number.
Oh, that's an imaginary number, sorry.
But like something like the square root of two, okay, is an irrational number, right? But it, but still is useful, right?
Okay.
Because you know, you use it in mathematical calculations, that sort of thing. It's related to two. But then there's a bunch of irrational numbers that's sort of there with just like a, you know, an irrational number, in case you don't know, is one where you can't express it as a fraction of two different whole numbers.
Yeah, right.
Right? And pi is one, and square root of two, e is one, you know, all these things. But some of them are useful and some of them are just there just because they're just numbers. So you can never actually write them down. You can never actually use them in anything because it just...
We've got imaginary numbers. We've got, what was the one you just said?
Irrational.
Are there unreasonable numbers?
34.
You go, just stop it. Just stop doing that. Stop being that. I guess in a way pi is an unreasonable number because it just kind of keeps going. It's got no pattern. It's just kind of, it's being wacky for wacky sense. Because it kind of knows that you need it.
Yeah, exactly. It's taking the piss, isn't it?
It's taking
the
piss.
In fact, it's, you know, it's pi is basically piss. Or, you know, it's on the way.
Yeah. Now, is there any sketch in this? And is this in any way related to flocking? I guess it is related to the flocking-o-kaneke hillimalification.
I mean, we could do better with the other words that we were given. Nation probation. Right? That feels to me like, you know, you could... The sort of situation where you could be a country, maybe you're allowed to be a country for a while, but you don't have full country rights.
Yeah.
I
mean, it could be a thing like where, you know, let's say you've decided that you're going to find a sort of relatively shallow bit of the middle of the ocean, international waters, and then start making yourself an island. And then once you do make it and you kind of keep making it bigger, maybe you made a lot of money on Bitcoin or something like that, and you're just making it bigger. And then at some point you're like, oh, now the world has to pay attention because it's kind of big enough. But they're like, well, right now I'm going to put you on nation probation. We're going to let you be a country for a bit, but on your P's, on your probations. And then we'll see. You got to do some good stuff in order to be accepted by the world community.
I wonder what kind of stuff you'd have to do, like invent something?
Oh, maybe. I mean, I think there's a lot of countries that probably are known, you know, that exist that aren't known for their sort of engineering prowess. Sure.
I like the idea of being out in international waters and finding the shallowest bit. Like, there might be a bit of international waters just somewhere in the middle of an ocean where the water's like, you know, only like ankle depth, right? So you could be out there and you could probably just live. You wouldn't even have to build it up or anything. Your feet would be wet.
Yeah.
Sure. But you could just sort of, you know, splash around.
Make
and that
a pile
sort of
sand.
No. You keep it all underwater.
All underwater.
That way, you know, they can't get you.
They can't get you like that.
You're still in international waters.
Could this be exactly what China is doing with those Pacific with those islands in the Pacific?
I think it could be something. Yeah. I mean, that would definitely, I think that would be a loophole, right? Because they're just out there, they're just waiting.
Yeah.
They're not invading, they're in waiting.
They're in waiting. Can you breach a country's international, sort of like their state boundaries by swimming into them? I guess you can, right?
Yeah, like, is that freedom of navigation? If you're swimming, there's freedom of navigation.
We have had the one-man freedom of navigation thing going
Did we?
Through. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Through the South China Sea.
Right, great.
I'm allowed to do this. I'm allowed.
Can't get me for this.
But, I mean, look, I mean, a country that's underwater.
I mean, it's probably going to happen. So,
that's true. I mean, do they lose their country rights when that happens?
I think
the foreign aid, maybe.
Yeah, I think there would be certain things that disappear, but you might find that it's actually good.
But would you create a society? What would the society look? Where would you sleep? Maybe on each other's piggybacking.
I mean, I suppose you could still have beds, right? And the beds would just sit in the water, and then you'd be out of the water to lie in the bed.
You know, it'd be really bad storms.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. That'd suck.
Waves coming through.
Waves. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about waves.
Yeah. Ugh. Yuck.
I wonder if you could set up some sort of, because you know how you can have artificial wave pools on land? I wonder if you could build something that is sort of like an artificial wave canceller, you know? If you could just do the whatever, you know, it just generates whatever the opposite of the wave is and cancels them out. And then you can make an artificially calm section of the ocean.
Yeah.
Maybe using sort of satellites or blimps or something.
Well, sort of like, you know, like noise-canceling headphones, but with physical waves.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we could turn that into a thing.
Yeah.
Right? And then you just make a nation of wet-ankled people. In the middle of the...
And mostly damp up above as well.
Sure. You'd be...
From ocean spray and things like that.
Yeah, you'd be damp. You'd be fairly damp. And crusty, salty.
And it'd be one of the only countries where no matter where you are, you could be attacked by a shark.
Correct.
You know? Did you know? Fun fact.
I think that's...
I mean, it's a sketch idea?
Yeah, write it down. Yeah, I think we sort of worked through some of the kinks and some of the technology.
What would the sketch look like, though, in your mind?
Oh, God. Let's see. It could be a travel documentary type thing, like a kind of a getaway kind of thing.
Is it just sort of like six people live there? They just walk around this sort of like little sandbar?
You know, it's a region in the middle of the ocean that they're just sort of, you know, they're trying to get their tourism up and talking about the advantages of it. And
yeah,
I guess anything goes.
Wow, you can gamble as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you accidentally drop your chips, your poker chips in the water, and they start floating. Oh!
Crab takes them.
Crab, yeah. Imagine that. Crab's trying to share the sandbar with you.
It's,
I like that the idea that there's like, you know, two of the four, six people that live there have to be the ones holding you up while you sleep.
You work in shifts. Yeah.
So you
Because in order to maintain their status and not breach any sort of international regulations and that sort of thing, maybe they aren't allowed to have any freestanding stuff that stands above the ocean.
Build any infrastructure and things like that. Even they, in the way in which they stand above the ocean, they kind of... I mean, I think you're allowed to stand above the ocean, but I guess you're not allowed to build any stuff because it's technically...
I
don't know, China probably doesn't like it.
Yeah. I think it would piss everybody off. They found a little loophole that if you're willing to remain damp, you can get away with a lot.
Which is crazy because also the part that they're on is one of the only things that isn't whole. They're surrounded by sort of ocean hole.
Well, I mean, it's still it's shallow.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like you said, they found a loophole, but really what they found was the opposite of a hole.
A lump hole.
Yeah. No, not a hole.
A loop lump.
A loop lump.
Oh, is that the flimsiest idea we've ever come up with on the show?
Andy, how dare you? I mean, I'm sure all our listeners are just so pleased that they're hearing us do such good work with their ideas, with their words.
Thanks. Yeah, no, that is good.
What we have next is from a person called Henry Smith.
Henry Smith.
Henry Smith.
Oh.
With the words museum, asteroid, and justice. But there's a little letter O here, and I'm not after justice. And I'm not sure whether they put that in or I accidentally put that in.
Justice O?
Justice O. And I like to think of that being a judge's name. Justice O. You know, sort of like Cher, but with just one letter.
There are no fabulous justices, are there? The fabulous Justice O.
Yeah. Mm. And they wear like robes, but very elaborate robes. Sort of,
and they have a judge's wig, but it's a different kind of wig.
Oh, it's very tall.
Yeah, and long and wide.
Yeah, it's like a sort of like a ancient sort of dusted one of those ancient dusted wigs, but wide like a sombrero.
Ancient dusted wig.
You know those like Shakespearean dusted wigs.
Dusted Shakespearean.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, sort of like a judge's wig, you mean?
Well,
like
powdered. It's a powdered wig rather than dusted.
Yeah.
It's dusted with powder.
Right, right, right. So it goes sort of straight out.
Wide like that, but then up into
then
a big...
A dome?
Well, you know, like more like a beehive or something, you know? I guess that's a form of dome. I guess domes don't have to be semicircular.
Maybe not. Yeah, probably just curved on top.
Could be a flame shape.
Sure.
Justice O with his flame-shaped dusty wig. The most fabulous justice. And then, you know, he...
Just because justice is blind, it doesn't mean it has to dress shabby.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for not looking fabulous.
He's a southern... He's like a southern lawyer.
Yeah.
Well, I declare...
The fabulous Justice O. What were the other two words there?
This will tell us the direction of the sketch.
Yeah.
Museum asteroid.
Oh, God.
It's Justice O was presiding over the people. Versus space.
Because
the people had their museum destroyed
by an asteroid. That would be really interesting, wouldn't it, if we started to hold... Well, I mean, if you think back to the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, I mean, that is a
court case waiting to happen.
It absolutely is. That's a class action. And by class, I mean the...
All class.
No, wait. I mean, yes, because the justice over. I'm thinking class is one of the classifications in species. I think reptiles might even be a class.
Yeah.
And in which case, they have a class action against that asteroid.
Dinosaur.
Yeah.
So for some reason, Justice O is overseeing this thing.
Reptiles versus asteroids, right?
Oh, yeah, because it's also a museum. So this is the second time an asteroid has destroyed dinosaur bones.
An asteroid came back to finish off what was left of the dinosaurs, to really rub it in their faces, and destroyed a natural history museum, and that was too much for the reptiles.
Well, somehow the people, as the living creatures that are left, are representing the reptiles.
Mm.
And they're coming, and they're realizing that maybe this isn't all an accident. And so the prosecution is putting forward the suggestion that there actually is some force up there.
Well, I wonder if an asteroid could be sentient. Now, hear me out.
Okay.
An asteroid belt. Did I say that? If an asteroid belt could be sentient. Now, think about an asteroid belt. What is it? It's a whole lot of asteroids sort of all arranged there, spread out a little bit, but sort of like that, right? And what are they doing? They're moving around. They're bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe those bumps communicate information in some way. Maybe they act like the synapses and the neurons in the human brain.
Well,
maybe it operates very, very slowly over a very wide time scale, but all those rocks taken together form a consciousness.
Well, I mean, if the world really is can be what is it called? If it really is deterministic, then there actually is. This is what I've had a discussion recently with Lawrence Lung's partner, Maya, about, and she works in sort of decision-making, cognitive sort of neuroscience kind of stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so all those researchers, they don't believe that we actually make decisions. According to the evidence, it's all deterministic and it's all just happening based on chemical reactions that can all be predictable.
Okay.
Right? And so if that is the case, then there's no difference between the physical nature of what's happening in a brain and the physical nature of what's happening in an asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
So consciousness itself is just a continuation of movement from the Big Bang. Mm. And so if you can prosecute a person with their mind, then you can prosecute an asteroid belt.
Okay, great.
And Justice O is just the judge to do it, to put this asteroid belt in jail.
Awesome. Okay. And I'll tell you, the asteroid belt, obviously
asteroid bort is actually what it's called.
Okay, great. Good detail.
And then we're going to bring them all down and pile them all up and then put a cage around them.
Okay.
Maybe exploit them for their minerals.
I think
to make license plates.
That all goes to the reptiles.
That's right. It'll be money to, I guess, pay, just give. Suddenly, reptiles become the richest animals on the planet.
What? Well, I mean, I guess if it were up to the reptiles, they would probably then just climb on top of those rocks and bask in the sun.
That's true.
Also the glory of their victory.
Oh, absolutely. But do you think what the reptiles would do with that money, or do you think we could just assume that they would want us to have it?
I think it would be interesting to see how long we waited before we just started taking the money off the reptiles.
And here you go. Then suddenly they're just like, you know, we're dressing them up, trying to spend the money for them on them.
Yeah.
We've set up an independent organization that's doing it and buying them gold chains and
sort
hats
of like
and
when an insane old lady leaves all her money to her cats and there's like a caretaker who has to look after the cats. And the caretaker starts to decide that the cats want a lot of trips to the Bahamas and
that's
that
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're like that, but with reptiles.
With all of the reptiles who've got this huge payout from all the minerals in these asteroid belts that were prosecuted for.
What a fascinating sequence of events.
Well, I mean, that's what you get when you put in a few words. I mean, we probably, for the other suggested words, we probably should have really been as elaborate as that and made sure that we were including all the words.
I mean, that's a novel thought, doing what we said we'd do. I'll bear it in mind. Yeah, I like the sound of this Justice O character as well. I think that their robes would be figure-hugging.
I think one, yeah, One would be the front. I mean, the underrobe.
Mm.
But then there'd be this kind of frilly cape robe that kind of maybe is open at the front and the back.
What about a sort of a clear plastic robe?
I mean, it's black in the dark. It's black when the lights are off. Justice, you're out of order. You're out of order. Get out of my courtroom, sugar. I don't know.
Okay.
Now he's like Foxy Cleopatra. I judge like one of the female protagonists in The Spy Who Shagged Me, or the third, no, the Goldfinger.
Gold member. Gold member, yes. Okay. I like it, and I'm also turned on.
Yeah, great.
So, that's comedy.
That's really good. What we got here, and you're not going to believe this, this one goes all the way back to our good friend, Daniel J. Let's Play podcast.
Daniel K?
Daniel K. When I put things in, they get corrected. And I know that it's Daniel K. I wonder what K stands for. You think it's Kellogg's?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Special K. Is that special Kellogg's?
Daniel, thank you for everything.
Daniel K., thank you for everything that you do.
Yeah. I hope to see you soon.
Listen to his audio-only Let's Plays podcast, Daniel K. Let's Play podcast.
Daniel is one of the most prolific and creative people on the internet, mm-hmm. and you've got to check out some of his stuff. Everything he does is good and funny.
Even his interests are good and funny.
Yes, correct.
Excluding this one, obviously.
Sure. This isn't good or funny.
We don't compliment ourselves on this podcast.
That's one of the things I like about us.
What's one of the core beliefs of the Two in the Think Tank podcast. Okay, so Daniel K's Let's Play podcast have suggested three words: octonauts.
Mm.
Sketch.
Mm.
Please. I feel like there's a message in there somewhere.
Yeah, but I feel like he's burned two of those words, right? You feel real confident about one of your words.
Mm.
You can do anything with the next two. Mm. You can coast. Good first word and just coast.
And this is the thing is that with the other word, please, the word please is both sort of a polite request for what you want, but it's also the effect that you want the other person's actions to have on you.
To please you.
Yeah.
This pleases me. Mm. Let's focus on the words sketch, please. I think that's what Daniel is. You know, two-thirds of the words are the words sketch, please. So yeah. I think if we came up with something based on that, I reckon he'd be two-thirds happy.
I mean, do you think Justice O's full name is Justice Octonauts?
I've only seen one episode of The Octonauts, but I liked the look of it. As a family who watches way too much Paw Patrol, the worst television show in the world that I hate and that makes the world worse and is ruining the minds of my children and poisoning me against them, my children, as well. Driving our family apart.
Yeah. But driving
but
them.
That we watch
but it's
every
little
single
dogs
day.
Driving them around.
Correct.
Your family apart.
Yes. Octonauts seemed fun, seemed creative, and seemed to have like interesting information.
Somewhat educational. They teach you about basically a new and sort of more rare sort of sea creature each episode.
Didn't know that, but
well, in the episode you would have seen, they would have taught you about a sea creature.
There was an octopus of some kind, but I figured there probably was in every episode because it's called Octonauts.
Well, that might be the base that they're in.
Oh, no, but you're right. There was a tiny little sort of plankton type thing as well that was living in water that was red because of rust. And I was like, oh, this is all really interesting information.
Mm. Do you think that water that was rust, do you think it's that – you know how there's that thing where it's like dust that flies off from the Sahara – flies up into the air and lands in the ocean and is responsible for like a huge part of the nutrition that the ocean gets and is, you know, responsible for the flourishing of many creatures and things like that. Do you think it's
part of I have never heard any of this, Alistair. Mm. That's real interesting.
Turns out that even deserts, who we you know that we consider to be pointless and kind of you know real waste of space.
Yeah, we all do.
They also serve a purpose. Things like that. Anyway.
So they're sort of seasoning the oceans with whatever.
Topsoil or top sand.
I think salt makes everything more delicious, except for the ocean, right? Well, it makes water less delicious. It's weird, isn't it?
But that's because there's too much salt.
Maybe, yeah. Do you think it's just a little bit of salt into some water? Mm-hmm. Just the right amount could really sort of enhance the flavor of the water and make it just...
Just like brings out the chlorine.
The chlorine. Yeah. Oh, you can really taste the lead leaching out of the pipes. Wonder what lead tastes like.
Oh, you want to know, don't you?
I do want to know. Mm. Do you think that maybe just before we die we could have a little lick?
Well, you know, a lot of people are like, well, if I get too old, I'm just going to give myself a big shot of heroin, you know, just so I can know what it's like. Well, we don't have to do that because we're going to do something way funner and more creative. So we're going to suck on a lead pipe. I mean, if you could taste the lead, how would you have the lead?
I would just suck on a pipe. Like, I know it's like a soft metal, so it would be quite nice to be able to bite into a metal and see little dents in there. Like,
yeah, that would be satisfying.
That would be satisfying. You'd really feel like you'd made an impact on the world.
Well, I guess, look, is there a way to integrate these kinds of ideas of interesting experiences that you can only do right before you die?
Into an episode of The Octonauts?
Well, and an underwater team. That goes on adventures and things like that. Maybe like an underwater team that gets called out to sort of different people who are basically on the end, and it helps them fulfill their last wish that may kill them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I like the idea of, you know how sometimes a children's show will do a special episode where they somehow deal with death and help kids to like sort of process that idea?
This show... will be that every episode.
Every episode.
Except for one.
Except for one when something happens in the real world that they feel that they have to address.
Well,
like...
No, I was thinking of something that happens where they have to address a specific sea creature. In one episode, they go, and this is a special episode where it's just about that manta shrimp.
I think that's really good.
So it's a team who have an underwater base.
Yeah.
And then they have like...
And every episode they address death.
They address...
And grieving.
Yeah, and a person who's like either wants to die or is at the end of their life for various reasons. And then they help them do something that they've always wanted to do, but that probably will kill them, but it doesn't matter now to them because they're about to die.
So every episode is a very special episode, except for one episode.
Except for one, which is about manta shrimp. And it's lost its brother or something like that. And they help them find that.
And they have a tea party.
Yeah, but that's the only episode they call a special episode.
No. I think every episode is a very special episode.
And this one's not a special episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Great. And what do we call it? We call it Octomorts.
What does the octo mean in that?
Well, they're octopuses.
Oh, they're all octopuses.
Yeah.
Or they... They just wear an octopus costume.
Sure.
which you actually have to keep dry.
Okay.
So they...
It's water soluble. It's made from...
It just gets really heavy if you go in the water with
it. Okay.
So they have to like be in bubbles. They have to sort of be in sort of like, you know, underwater scooter bubbles.
Right. So they are still underwater.
Yeah, they have an underwater team. This is why it's still kind of an Octonauts sketch. So this is what I'm saying. It's like, this is what's interesting about them. They have a base underwater. They could be like these people who live in this ankle-deep water.
I thought what was interesting about them was that they exclusively address death.
Well, that's it. That is interesting. But the fact that they're a team who live together underwater in a base, probably so they can avoid land tax.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
You know?
There's no water tax, is there?
I don't think so. Not that I know of, but I haven't worked in fisheries.
I wonder if you could, you know, if you were on land, right? Mm. If you're on land, you could maybe flood it as a way to avoid land tax, right? Say you've got a property, you've got, you know, 200 acres or whatever, and you're sick of having to pay for it. If there was a big lake in the middle of that property, you wouldn't have to pay for that land, okay, because that's underwater. But what you can do is you can build just a very small wall all the way around the outside of your property and then just fill it up with water.
That's right? A great idea.
And then loophole, no more land tax for you.
That's right. And then suddenly we have the other sketch that we had from before with these people who live in a sort of a couple of inches of water that we didn't know what to do with.
Mm.
But now on land.
On land. Now it's something. Now it's something.
I like that, Andy.
Thanks.
Thank you, Daniel J.
Mm.
Let's K. Plod Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Our next listener who's donated three words is James Roy.
James Roy.
James Roy. R-O-Y-E. Would you say Roy?
Roy.
Roye? Roha? Roja?
Well, I think knowing how you like to type things on the phone,
it's probably
just
Royce
James
or something.
Roy E.
Yeah.
You know, you've put the E in there.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
First word. All encompassing.
Really good.
Second word, background.
Okay.
And third word, experience.
All encompassing background experience.
Interesting.
It almost feels
very
like
evocative.
We've had these words on the podcast before, but
yeah?
It's possible that we haven't as well.
Oh my
God. All encompassing background experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, what if we as a species?
Have I read this out before?
I don't know. What if we as a species had never learned about editing, right?
Yep.
So every time you want to tell a story, you've got to start from the beginning of your life and tell up to that point.
Yeah, right? Wow.
Would that be interesting in any way? Like,
but then why would you edit it by starting it at the time of the beginning of your life and not at the beginning of time?
Yeah, you're probably right. I think
we don't know about editing.
How do we know?
And then nobody has ever written the story to its conclusion, gotten to even the current day.
Mm-hmm.
And so the race is that you've got to write your story so fast throughout your life to try and get to the story you actually want to tell.
Everyone's all filling in the background. What about Alistair? Everyone's always talking about, are we living in a simulation?
Yeah.
What if we're not living in a simulation? What if we're living in a story, right? And what if this is... What if this is just a – you said we might be holograms. What if we are just a hologram? What if we're just a projection of somebody telling a story about a different universe, right? And they're just trying to get up to the point where the thing that they're talking about happens, okay? And that's when the universe will end, when they finally get to the thing that they were trying to say. So in order to tell the story, they have to give all the detail. And then that's just us. You know, this would fit in with your thing about everything being deterministic. It's not – things aren't happening because of, you know, choices. Things are happening because that's what happened in the story. It's
and
just,
the universe is expanding because of all the world building that's happening.
Correct.
And the reason why it's still speeding up that physicists can't explain is because the person telling the story is getting really excited because he knows a good bit's coming up.
Yes. I mean, no, we could be getting to something, you know.
And so, but then what? So in the sketch, this is almost more like a sci-fi story, maybe. But we somehow find a way to discover, or we somehow discover how to get outside of the story and see that we're inside a mind, or see that we're where are we? Are we where does this physical thing, this hologram, sort of manifest itself? Is it in the mind of a person? We realize that we're in a brain, that we can see the synapses or something like that through – they realize all the little subatomic particles that we thought were, you know, part made up of matter were actually just made up of ideas and a mental picture.
They're all just,
you know,
plot points.
At its fundamental source, it's just electricity, just energy. So then we're like – we realize that's, you know, and so then we're like, fuck. And then we somehow get to the outside of that, and then we start climbing out of the thing's ear, And we get to see the universe as it is. It's pretty much the same, but bigger.
Yeah, I think so, and more detailed, right?
Way more detailed.
Because they're always going to have to overlook some level of detail, right? So that's why, you know, there's a level of detail that we can't observe, smaller than the universe, the detail level of the universe. They're just in a much more detailed universe, and we're a sort of a summary
of things
that had happened in that universe up until that point.
How do we get from the level of
being in the mind
to being reality? There's got to be maybe at this point bodies have 3D printers in them that allow you to take your ideas and make them real.
I mean, it's hard to imagine because I can't quite picture any examples in my experience where a character has gone from being in a story to being real, except perhaps for the movie Last Action Hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, what about Homer when he goes through that vortex and he falls into the real world?
The 3D world. Yeah, that episode of Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah. But imagine this, right? So let's say you're telling a story and you've created this character, right, in your mind who has a certain number of traits, right? But as you somehow are transferring them, I don't know. Let's say your brain knows that what has to be in a brain because it remembers what was in your brain at the beginning of time. So it gives it that property plus the property of all these memories, these constructed memories that you've applied to this character in your head. And then it starts to put those into a tiny, I don't know, it does, you know, like snails can have sex with themselves and it creates like, you know, like single creature recreation of blah, blah, blah. That starts happening using some of this person's sperm, goes up into their belly, right? And then it starts splitting. But then all the proteins come and they edit the DNA so that it matches the one of the person in the what they look like in the story. And then they start to grow in their belly. And then they come out their belly
give
button.
Give birth to a character that you're telling a story
about. With the ideas.
This is, Alistair, in this other universe where this is taking place, this is how they reproduce. You have to tell a sufficiently detailed story of the origin of a universe to build up to the point where one of your characters is so detailed that there's enough information there for them to be real. Right, something becomes real once it reaches a level of detail that is equivalent to the level of detail that's encoded into anything that's in your universe, right? Because that's all existence is. It's just information. So all you've got to do is just got to get enough information into one place and then something will become real. That's how it works in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So every parent, rather than, you know, having sex or something disgusting like that, you just tell a really, really detailed story and you get to a point and then you give birth to the protagonist of your story. Mm-hmm. God, I hope it's me. I hope I'm the protagonist of this story and not just one of the universal background, all-encompassing background characters required to give detail.
But all these people are important in the building of how this person's life, you know, and consciousness is shaped. So you could be important.
Oh, I don't want to be important, Alistair. I want to be real. I want to be a real boy or blob or whatever kind of creature they are in this universe.
And maybe somewhere along telling the story you have an orgasm.
I hope so. Well, the climax of the story, presumably.
Yes, well, you know, that's why
I reached climax. Sorry, the climax.
The universe where people reproduce by telling a story.
A narratorgasm. Narratorgasm.
Yes, I'll write that down, Andrew.
Or narratorganism.
Organism. I didn't look at what time we need to be at that thing. Sorry, do you want to just pause it for 1 second?
Thanks for bearing with us for the duration of that pause in the
recording.
That minute
pause while we had a tiny little panic.
I feel like that's basically what my mum does every time she tells a story. She honestly, if she wants to tell a story, she goes so far back and gives so much detail. It is like she is trying to create an entirely new universe.
Well, you know, I was told that reading shouldn't be about what the story is. It should be about the enjoyment of the journey, of enjoying the words and the descriptions and the beauty of
it. Yeah, and that's exactly the experience I'm able to eliminate every time I go and read a synopsis on Wikipedia.
That's right. Yeah.
I think this story-based procreation thing is quite – it's a really interesting philosophical philosophically, it's fascinating. Like I feel like if I was Jorge Luis Borges and I wrote that as really well like he does, I'd probably win a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, no bloody doubt.
Yes.
And then the last, I guess now we're just going to do, so we've already got five sketches, so we're just going to do three words from a listener. And we're going to go to a very recent addition to the Patreon.
The Patreon Pantheon.
Yes. Jimbri.
Jimbri. Jimbri.
Jimbri.
Jimbri.
Jimbri. Jimbri. Jimbri. Jimbri. Jimbri. Jimbri. Jimbri. Daniel Kay. Jimbri's words are egg.
Yes.
Postman.
Mm.
Rises.
Egg. Postman. Rises.
I mean, this one writes itself, right?
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely.
I mean, it's a... it's a postman who died.
Yep.
But then turned into an egg.
And then
comes back to life and then finishes the job because he's got unfinished business. A bag of mail.
A bag of mail. I mean, it wouldn't be really all that surprising to me if postmen did reproduce via eggs that are kind of like envelopes.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, they'll post an envelope through your slot, and if you leave the envelope unopened for long enough, right, it'll sort of start to swell up until it's like a parcel, and then it'll turn into a package,
yeah,
and then, you know, it'll eventually burst open, and there'll be another postman there.
Yeah, maybe the final stage is a mailbox, and then inside a fully grown adult mailman comes out.
Yeah.
He has the key. He's got the key.
Yes.
Like that. Comes out and goes, sorry, excuse me, don't mean to be a bother. Or he just knocks on your door and he leaves a little note.
It just seems to make sense to me because you think about being a postman, right? If they weren't a human, but they were more like a sort of a plant, right?
Yeah.
Think about plants. They need to distribute their seeds as far and wide as they can. And the way that they do that is by making something that is desirable, which is a fruit. So it's eaten by monkeys or birds or whatever, and then they fly around and they poop that out. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a postman and you reproduce via envelopes, it makes sense that you create the entire idea of a mail network, and you do distribute other people's mail and that sort of thing as well.
But you put your seed on it.
To give an excuse for going out and putting it into people's letterboxes so that they take it into their houses or whatever, right? Spreads it out far and wide. But then some of those envelopes, like those ones that are just addressed to the householder, that you know are just like some sort of bullshit spam, right? They're the ones that are actually the reproductive material for the postman that you go and you just put in a cupboard and you forget about them. And then over time,
Do you think that they get the other genetic material from the edge of your letterbox? You know, as they pop it in, it's wherever you've run your fingers.
Gets inseminated or something.
You've run your fingers along there to try to get mail out in the past. And it's always kind of like awkward trying to get your finger in
the
hole.
Bit scratchy,
things like that. Little skin cells get in there. And then that mailman slots in his dirty to the household.
unfertilized
to the household envelope.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely. I mean, if you don't just pop that straight into the recycling bin, and instead you put it in a little pile of letters that you will check one day. That's how they breed.
Correct.
Like that's the mailman's version of like a seed dropping to the ground
from a sycamore tree.
From a sycamore tree, and then falling deep enough into the earth on a sort of you know, a misty day that that moisture can activate the sprouting process.
Mm-hmm. The pores. Mm. Yeah, this is the sickest amore of all.
Mm-hmm. That's a sick amore. When the tree has a branch and it looks like a avalanche. That's
amore. Yes. Yeah. When the seed twirls around as it falls to the ground, that's sycamore.
Sycamore. Mm-hmm. Is this the sketch?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Alistair. That's the best one we've come up with so far.
Better than Justice O's prosecution of an asteroid belt for the reptiles? I don't think so.
Yes. Yes. Love it. Love it. I wonder what roid rage could be asteroid-based as well. Doesn't have to be steroids. Could be anything that ends in roid.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it could be. I don't think you would have roid rage as it enters the atmosphere and it kind of heats up the atmosphere to the point where everybody on...
Everything becomes a plasma and you all get vaporized.
Yeah, but I think there would be roid disappointment, you know? Nuts.
You would think. Yeah. As a vapor?
Well, you know, as that beginning part where you see it enter and you go, oh, my God, that's incredible. You go, oh, no, this is bad. That is much too big.
It's too close.
It's too close. Too it's too big. But imagine if you saw something the size of, like, the moon entering the Earth's atmosphere. There would be a big part of you going, oh, fiddlesticks.
Yeah.
This is going to be really bad. And your mind would... work fast enough that you could imagine.
I don't know if it would.
I think like you could be like you would kind of make sense of it. You'd be like, I know what I'm seeing. I can't believe that this is not special effects, right? But I wonder if you could stay alive for long enough to see it knock some of the earth like up into the air and see that air go, that earth go so up that it like is released from the gravity of the earth and you see it spin around the earth.
Orbiting.
Do you think it could happen that fast or do you think you would already die by the time it's entering the atmosphere?
Look, I think I'd die, but I feel like you might be a bit more robust.
Well, I could be inside my car.
Yeah, okay.
And I just get that extra bit of shielding, whereas you would be outside weeding or something like that, and that's, you'd die instantly.
It's a really accurate... You got me there, Alistair.
Oh, wasting your life and then... wasting the last few moments in particular.
That you were enjoying in your car.
Where I was sitting, listening to music, avoiding going inside to engage with life.
Correcto. Correcto mundo.
Okay. So I'll take us through the...
nobody ever says incorrecto mundo, do they?
Incorrecto mundo.
Anyway.
They just started. I think these ideas kind of got a little bit more... interesting as the episode went on. But let's go back to the beginning. I guess, look, the first sketch is sticky transport.
That checks out.
And including sticky seats that are just kind of a gummy, sticky substance that kind of envelops you a little bit when you sit down. And they replace seat belts.
Yeah.
They replace the strapping on snowboards.
Yep.
Which I see as a form of transport. Mm. Oh, imagine that. If you could just get this sticky substance instead of chairlifts. Like that, instead of sort of a chairlift that comes underneath you, it's just a gooey substance that kind of...
envelops your back.
Well, yeah, just sticks to your back and then kind of suctions you up and then sort of just picks you up like that and it just kind of carries you and you just dangle.
Yeah, we'd get carried everywhere as if we're sort of the prey of a giant slug or something. I imagine that's what they do. They sort of gloop you.
I reckon maybe slime mold. If we could learn to control slime mold like we've sort of dominated the horse world, you know, and they could probably do that for us.
You ever get like try and pick up a snail?
Yeah, right? All the time.
And sometimes they really do seem to stick to the ground quite well. Mm. Like if we could get
that's a suction
so
thing
that like
do.
The bat, you know, if I imagine sitting into a seat in a car and you're actually folding yourself into sort of the curved underbelly of a giant snail or slug. That would feel quite nice.
Yeah, I think there's a thing.
They really grip.
I guess it would be like, you know, abalone. You know, those like creatures. When if you, I've never actually done this, but people who go and pry them off rocks, with like a screwdriver or whatever on deep in the
sea.
I've
done it.
You've done it?
Yeah.
Well, apparently if you try first and you don't get them on the first go,
you're done.
They really suck down then. And then it's like almost impossible to pry them off. So you have to kind of be really quick or else they find out that you're trying to get them.
Mm.
And then they're like, oh, fuck you. I'm going to be like...
You know what? I'm not going to die.
I'm going to be like the fridge door after you've just closed it. You know, some fridges do that thing where you just close the fridge and you go, oh, no, actually, I want to get back in. But then it's doing some weird suction thing. Like that, and you can't get it back open.
Yeah. That's my Ben Russell.
Yeah, very good.
No.
Eagle. Oh, no, ankle deep. I wrote angle deep.
Angle deep.
Ankle deep, touched by an ankle. Mm. Anyway. That's nothing.
Ankle grinder? Is that anything?
Yes. That's what they should call netball.
Mm.
Anyway, all right.
Touched by an uncle? Is that anything?
Oh! All right. Ankle deep water international country.
Mm.
It's not really a country, but
nothing
it's six people
to
live
be
there.
Said about
no,
that.
It's a,
nothing
it's
a, more needs
no,
to be
six
said.
Six people living there. They're trying to build up their tourism. They invite people to come. All it is just a sandbar somewhere in the middle of the ocean, and they're trying to pitch it as a tourism destination. $1,000 a night.
Okay.
But it's a unique experience.
But they
it?
Are carrying you for that night. You're
well,
sleeping on their
sleeping
back.
You're sleeping on their body, yeah.
Yeah.
How would you do it? Would you just bend over? Do you think bend over
I'd
and let them...
Like if it's only an ankle deep, I'd lie down on my back and I'd let them lie on top of me.
And so if there's any wave and stuff, water will just go in your mouth
and I'll
nose
finally
and
be
like
free
that.
Of this hell I've created.
Justice O's prosecution of an asteroid belt for the reptiles. I mean, that one.
I think I like Justice O more than I like the rest of it.
No, yeah. The whole thing is good. What? Where the reptiles get all this money and then slowly but surely we start deciding that we'll just keep it for ourselves? That's a really good idea.
Okay.
Underwater team that go and help people who will die soon to do things that would have killed them.
Mm.
You know, interesting things like tasting lead and having...
Today's a very regular episode about death.
Jumping into a volcano. I mean, that would be interesting.
Helping people to end it every episode. Again,
yeah.
Kids
I mean, not necessarily.
About a group of bears that dress up as octopuses and go in transparent bubbles under the water.
Why are they bears?
I just thought it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think that was interesting. But they're people in bear suits. They're just people.
Okay.
Who are
that is interesting.
Living under the sea to escape their troubles with the law. Because I guess you couldn't.
Been around a lot of death.
Yeah, well, you couldn't assist that many suicides, I guess, without arising some suspicions.
Right. So it is sort of like it's an assisted suicide group.
Yeah, but doing it in creative,
every
fun ways that could actually help you suffer quite a bit more.
With a suicide.
Mm.
That's really something.
But one episode,
like Paw Patrol,
just...
they always rescue someone from a fucking cliff edge or something. Well, here they're rescuing them from the nightmare that is life.
Cliff edges aren't as big a problem in real life as movies make them seem.
They're really not. They're always crumbling, aren't they?
Yeah, but they always sort of are just around, and they're not sort of they're not signposted as well as they could be,
as they perhaps could be and are in real life.
Mm-hmm. Then we have the universe where people reproduce by telling a story of a person.
Or of a whole other universe.
Or a universe.
To get sufficient detail. You tell it across eons and eons. And yes, the expansion is accelerating because they're getting close to the climax and they're excited.
Imagine that. But I wonder what happens to you in that universe. Let's say this is our universe. And then there's been enough details put into you.
Mm.
And so suddenly you're about to be taken out of this world and into the real world. I wonder what that would look like.
Mm. I reckon I'd get all sweaty.
There you go. The perfect solution.
I might start to glow. Could I start to glow then?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's one. Mm. But I mean.
And everything swirls around me.
Yeah. There you go, swirling.
Mm.
And then we got postmen reproduce via letters.
That checks out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be at all surprised. Thank you so much for listening to Two in the Think Tank. We really do appreciate it.
Very much. Thank you to everybody who's been contacting us via either Patreon or any other way. It's nice to you just have your interactions. Thank you so much, you know, for even bothering to listen.
Reviewing iTunes.
Remember that you can always go and buy tickets to our comedy festival shows.
Always, constantly.
because we've got Teleport coming up, Comedy Festival in Melbourne, starting in late March. But the earlier you buy tickets, the more certain you are of getting a seat, and the more certain we are that this could be in any way financially viable. It's a great way to support the show.
Yes, support the people who support the show.
And if you're after you've decided whether or not you're going to Teleport, there is also the other show that I'm doing, a solo stand-up show called Couldn't Be More Thrilled With Everything. And that's a secondary thought that you could have.
We've been talking about some of the jokes that are going to be in this show. And let me tell you, they're real good jokes.
I appreciate that, Andy. But Teleport is coming along so fun and so fine. It's going to be really fun.
Going to be good.
Feel free to review us. Contact us on Twitter at Two in Tank, on Facebook as well or whatever. And you know what? Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. Love each other.
And most importantly,
we
love
you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want, it's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.